Tonight we would like to cover chapters 38 and 39 of Isaiah. And at the end of this 39th chapter we have a major division in the book of Isaiah in that it ends the historical and the prophetic part up to that time, and then it goes more into the prophecies about Christ and the church. In the 38th chapter, we have a story of Hezekiah's sickness. Hezekiah, who was the king, of course, became very, very ill, almost to the point of death, and Isaiah tells a story about that. And then in the 39th chapter, we have another short chapter about Hezekiah doing some things that were not pleasing to God, and then a prophecy about the Israel being carried into captivity. So beginning in the 38th chapter of Isaiah, in those days was Hezekiah sick unto death. Now the setting for this, in those days, this would have to be right about the time, or probably right after the time, that Sennacherib and his army had been thwarted in their efforts to overtake Jerusalem. And this is probably right after that time. In those days was Hezekiah sick unto death. Now the kind of sickness that he had was probably a pestilence that manifested itself in the form of a boil. In verse 21 he mentions that they made this plaster out of figs and laid it upon the boil. And there was a sickness during that time that was described as a boil that was very fatal. It usually caused a person to die in a quick time, and especially if they didn't break out in the boils. If they did break out in the boils, then they'd have a chance to get well. I don't know if that's the same thing Hezekiah had or not. But he was sick unto death. That is, it was a kind of a sickness that they expected him to die. It was the sickness that you could expect to be fatal. And Isaiah the prophet, the son of Amos, came unto him and said unto him, Thus saith the Lord, Set thine house in order, for thou shalt die and not live. Now that didn't help the matter any. But the prophet, Isaiah, just came and told him, You're going to die. Now this is interesting to me in several respects. Here's a person that was in all likelihood going to die as a result of his sickness. And you know, there's usually a question that comes up among the family and the doctor and so on. When a person has a fatal disease, do we tell him or do we tell her that it's fatal? Do we tell them what they've got? And there's always some who want to say, well, no, let's keep it from them. Let's don't tell them they're going to die. But personally, I've found that it is never expedient not to level with a person and to tell them the truth about what kind of a condition they have, if you know what it is. Now, I don't believe in scaring somebody if you're not sure or if there's a big question about it. But even then, they should be given the benefit of what you know about it as a doctor or as a member of the family, I believe. And so in this case, Isaiah didn't seem to spare any words when he came to Hezekiah. He said, The Lord said to set your house in order, for thou shalt die and not live. Now that's making it about as plain as you're going to be able to make it. You're going to die. And this is the very reason here that I believe that a person should be told this, because there may be some things in that person's life that have yet to be straightened up. They may have some unfinished business with the Lord. And so they should be given the benefit that Hezekiah had here, and that is, set thine house in order. Anything that may be not in order, anything that may not be proper, you straighten it up. Now is the time to do it, because you're going to die and not live. In the case of Hezekiah, this probably had to do with the fact that he didn't have any children at this time and no descendants to take the throne after him. He wasn't expecting to die. Hezekiah had only been on the throne about 15 years. He took the throne when he was 24 years old. He was now 39, a relatively young man. He wasn't ready to die. He was in the prime of his life. And so his house wasn't prepared from a kingship position for him to die. But this also can and does have a broader meaning than just set in order for the who's going to succeed you as king. Set thine house in order. That's a cry. It's a plea that every one of us should heed now. Because although we don't know that we're going to die in the next day or so like Hezekiah was told he would, nevertheless we are going to die, and we don't know when. And so it's always an appropriate and proper thing to have the house in order. Then Hezekiah turned his face toward the wall and prayed unto the Lord. Hezekiah wasn't ready to die. Hezekiah just wasn't ready to give up. And this is the case so many times when a person seems to have a fatal disease and you tell them, it seems to relieve a burden of uncertainty that they have. And it seems to even, if anything, help them to cope with the situation. Hezekiah wasn't ready to die, and so he kept on imploring to the Lord and got even closer to the Lord as a result of this. He turned his face toward the wall. That was probably just the wall in his room so that those in there couldn't see his grief and his sorrow. And he prayed unto the Lord and said. Now this whole story is told in 2 Kings 20 verses 1 through 11. He said, "Remember now, O Lord, I beseech thee, how I have walked before thee in truth, and with a perfect heart, and have done that which is good in thy sight." And Hezekiah wept sore. So he calls upon the Lord to remember what he's done. Remember the kind of a life that he's led. Now, you know, there are many, many people, when it comes time to die, they want to cry to the Lord to save them, to protect them, but they're not able to tell the Lord to look at my life. Look what I've done. Hezekiah had been the most righteous of all the kings. You know, we've covered this several times, but I'd like to look at it one more time in 2 Kings 18, 3 through 5. Telling of the deeds of Hezekiah. "And he did that which was right in the sight of the Lord, according to all that David his father did. He removed the high places and brake the images and cut down the groves and brake in pieces the brazen serpent that Moses had made. For unto those days the children of Israel did burn incense to it, and he called it Nehushtan. He trusted in the Lord God of Israel, so that after him was none like him among all the kings of Judah, nor any that were before him. For he clave to the Lord and departed not from following him, but kept his commandments which the Lord commanded Moses." And he goes on to tell how the Lord then prospered him. Hezekiah had been a righteous king. And so now he tells the Lord. He says, "I beseech thee, remember how I have walked before thee in truth." Now that should be an attitude that each one of us have and will have yet in the future, that we walk before him in the truth. Not in some vain imagination, but we're walking the Christian walk. The godly walk, as it were, and we're doing it in truth. "And with a perfect heart." That is, my thoughts, my intentions have been according to what you want, God. "And have done that which is good in thy sight." I've actually done it. And Hezekiah wept sore. So his face was turned to the wall. Probably nobody in the room could see his true grief and true feelings. But Hezekiah was in earnest now. As much earnest as any person will ever be. And if you want a serious and a solemn occasion, you just deal with somebody when they're on their deathbed. That's not a time for frivolity. It's not a time for lighthearted thinking. But it's a time for earnest and solemn pleading. Hezekiah wept sore. There's a man 39 years old, not ready, not wanting to die. "Then came the word of the Lord to Isaiah, saying," as soon as Hezekiah had prayed, Isaiah received a revelation. The word of the Lord came to him, saying, And to get the fuller benefit of this, I want to look at 2 Kings 20, verse 4. He explains it a little better than Isaiah does. And it came to pass before Isaiah was gone into the middle of the court that the word of the Lord came to him, saying, Turn again and tell Hezekiah, the captain of my people, Thus saith the Lord, the God of David thy father, I have heard thy prayer, I have seen thy tears. Behold, I will heal thee. On the third day thou shalt go up into the house of the Lord. Before Isaiah even got out of the vicinity, he was still in the court. The Lord heard this prayer of Hezekiah, and he answered, and he told Isaiah what to say. So in verse 5, Go and say to Hezekiah, Thus saith the Lord, the God of David thy father, I have heard thy prayer, I have seen thy tears. Behold, I will add unto thy days 15 years. Now, Hezekiah was given a promise here that he was going to get to live 15 years longer. And this is the only case that we have a record of any place where any man was told how long he was going to get to live. I'll add to your days 15 years. And then the king says that within 3 days you'll go into the temple. So Hezekiah was given some promises here. I've heard your prayer. I've seen your tears. I'll give you 15 more years to live, and before 3 days you'll go into the temple. I'm going to heal you. Now this is, you know, just like giving life to the dead. And it's quite a dramatic scene and occasion here to have happen. But it did happen to Hezekiah. And in verse 6 he says, I will deliver thee and this city out of the hand of the king of Assyria, and I'll defend this city. Now a lot of people take this passage here to mean that Sennacherib had not yet been destroyed or had not yet been defeated in his siege of Jerusalem, and we've had several chapters to that effect. But what this probably means is that this king of Assyria will no longer bother you. He's not going to come back to bother you anymore, and I'm going to protect you in future times even from the Assyrians. And in 2 Kings 20, 7 and 8, he even adds more to this passage than Isaiah does here. He tells about taking this a plaster of figs, this lump of figs, and laid it on the boil and to use it to heal with. And Isaiah adds it as a footnote at the end of his chapter here. And this shall be a sign unto thee from the Lord, that the Lord will do this thing that he has spoken. Now he's going to give Hezekiah a sign that he's going to do this. What is he going to do? In addition to healing him, he'd go into the temple in 3 days, and he would be given 15 more years to live, plus he would no longer allow him nor the city to be besieged by the Assyrians. He'd protect them. This was the sign. Behold, I will bring again the shadow of the degrees which is gone down in the sundial of Ahaz, 10 degrees backwards. So the sun returned 10 degrees, by which degrees it was gone down. Now let's read the account in 2 Kings 20, 9 through 11. It's a little fuller than that. And Isaiah said, This sign shall thou have of the Lord, that the Lord will do the thing that he has spoken. Shall the shadow go forward 10 degrees or go back 10 degrees? It seemed that he gave Hezekiah a choice. You can let this thing go forward 10 degrees or back 10 degrees. And Hezekiah answered, It's a light thing for the shadow to go down 10 degrees. In other words, that's the way it goes normally. Nay, but let the shadow go backwards 10 degrees. And Isaiah the prophet cried unto the Lord, and he brought the shadow 10 degrees backwards, by which it had gone down in the dial of Ahaz. Now this was a sundial that had been put there by his father Ahaz, and this is the first record that we have in the Bible of any kind of a timekeeping device in the Bible. A sundial or anything of that nature. And apparently Ahaz was the one who had introduced this into the area of Judea. Ahaz, you know, was pretty good to bring things in from other countries. He went up, I believe it was to Samaria, and he brought back a replica of the altar and put it in there. And so here we have a sundial. The Chaldeans, or the Babylonians, were among the first to be the astronomers that we know of now and have things like sundials. and probably he borrowed it or got the invention from him. So it was a sundial of Ahaz, and the way these things worked, as the sun passed over, it cast a shadow, and there were markings on this area where the shadow was, and as the shadow passed a certain mark, well, that was considered to be a certain time. And these were considered to be divided into 12-hour intervals, so that the day was divided into 12 sections of time. Well, 10 of these degrees, the sun would pass over a certain time, probably 10 hours on average, to get 10 degrees. Well, he gave Ahaz the choice, shall the sun pass forward 10 degrees or backwards 10 degrees? And Ahaz said, well, it's a small thing for it to go forward. Let's let it go backwards. And so the sun backed up 10 degrees. This would have to be an out-and-out miracle, and we do not know exactly how it happened. The earth could have stopped. Some other element in the heavens could have stopped. Or the Lord could have just caused the rays of the sun to be bent at a greater angle and then to change the shadow on the dial. But it doesn't matter how it happened, although we don't have any record of the world stopping at that time anyplace else. But it doesn't matter how it happened. The fact is it did happen. This would be a terrific miracle to perform, one that we today could in no wise imitate at all, to make a shadow back up a space of several hours of where it had been. But it did happen. And so this was a sign that the Lord showed Hezekiah that this thing would happen to him, and it did. So beginning in the 9th verse, we have now what we can call a hymn of Hezekiah. This is the thing that Hezekiah sang in praise to the Lord as a result of his having been healed. And it was a common thing for a person, after coming through a time of definite trial, after coming through a time in which your life had been threatened to the very nth degree, then to write a hymn or a song or a psalm about that in praise to God. This is what seems to have happened to David over and over and over as he wrote the book of Psalms. As he would come through one great catastrophe after another and saw how the Lord had delivered him, he'd write a psalm about it. So this is the hymn of Hezekiah. The writing of Hezekiah, the king of Judah, when he had been sick and was recovered of his sickness. That's the introduction to it now. And this thing has a lot of phraseology that's a little difficult to make an application of, but to me it's a very beautiful piece of writing. I said in the cutting off of my days, I shall go to the gates of the grave. I am deprived of the residue of my years. Now, these first few verses, down through verse 14, is really a description of Hezekiah's apprehension during his illness. And so he described himself as being in the time of the cutting off of his days. Here he was a young man, and he was going to be cut off. He was not going to be allowed to live out the rest of his years. So he said, in the cutting off of my days, I shall go to the gates of the grave. There he was brought right to the very gates of death, right to the gates of the grave, just practically as it were a dead man. I am deprived of the residue of my years. That is, the rest of my years I'll not have. They're taken away from me. I'm deprived of what's left of my years. I said, I shall not see the Lord, even the Lord in the land of the living. I shall behold man no more with the inhabitants of the world. So one of his thoughts at that time was, I'm not going to be able to see the Lord anymore in the land of the living. I won't be able to praise him, go to the temple, do those things and worship and service to him. Not anymore in this land, not in the land of the living, will I see the Lord anymore. Nor shall I behold man anymore in the inhabitants of the world. I'm going to be cut off from all this. I'm going to be taken out of this world. No longer in the land of the living. Mine age is departed and is removed from me as a shepherd's tent. Now the word age here really would mean his remaining life, his remaining years. He said, it's left me. It's been taken away from me just like a shepherd's tent. Just as though you would take a shepherd's tent and fold it up and move it to another place. That's what's happened to my remaining time on this earth. It's left me. Doesn't mean that I have ceased to exist. Doesn't mean that I'll no more live or exist at all, but it means that my place has been changed. It's been moved. It's so temporary. Never intended to be here permanently, and now the time has come for it to be moved. I have cut off like a weaver my life. He will cut me off with the pining sickness. Now, this is an allusion to the weaver as he would sit at the loom and weave his cloth. When he got through, he just cut the thing loose from the loom. I can't think of the technical words of what it was attached to, but he just cut it loose, and just like a weaver, after he'd finished his piece of work there, and he could probably do it in a day or so, when he finished it, he just cut it loose, and it was no longer attached then to this thing that had created it and that had really caused it to be. And the next phrase, he will cut me off with the pining sickness, that really should be, he will cut me off from the thrum, T-H-R-U-M, and that's another allusion to the weaver cutting off this thing that he'd weaved. From day even to night wilt thou make an end of me. That is, I won't last much more than just a day and a night. That's about all I'm just going to be until I'm gone from here. Just a day and a night, and then you're going to make an end of me. And the next verse is still a little difficult to interpret. I reckon till morning that, and that word that is not supposed to be there, it's in italics, as a lion, so will he break all my bones. From day even to night wilt thou make an end of me. So what this seems to mean is that I reckon till morning. That is, I contemplated, I thought about this, I concentrated on this till morning, hoping to be healed, hoping to get better. But like a lion, he will break all my bones, or he did break all my bones. That is, when morning came, I was sicker than ever. It's as though a lion had ravaged me. It's as though I had been just completely destroyed. All my bones broken. From day even to night wilt thou make an end of me. Here again, implying that it's just going to be about a 24-hour period, and I'll no longer be here. Now, these are thoughts that he implies that he was thinking during this time that he was on his deathbed. Isaiah came and said, well, you get your house set right with God. You're going to die. You're not going to live. And so these thoughts going through his mind. You know, we think, well, Hezekiah probably just took it real calmly and peacefully. Not so. Hezekiah fought this death. He didn't want to die. And these are the thoughts that were going through his mind. So in verse 14, like a crane or a swallow, so did I chatter. This is some kind of a bird here that we can't be sure exactly what kind of bird it is, but he made a noise like a bird. I did mourn as a dove. Mine eyes fail with looking upward. O Lord, I'm oppressed. Undertake for me. He said, I was mourning like a dove. I was crying like a bird. And mine eyes, they became weary from looking up. I spent so much time looking up, pleading with and imploring the Lord to help me, that my eyes got tired of looking up. And so he says, O Lord, I'm oppressed. Undertake for me. And the word undertake here means ease me. Help me. Support me. That's Hezekiah. That's his feeling while in this state of near death. And then, verse 15, we have the second part of his psalm, and that is praise given to God as a result of his deliverance. And the first thing he says is, what shall I say? And of course, these are words that any of us might express, having been just brought out of the very mouth of the grave itself. What can I say? He hath both spoken unto me, and himself hath done it. Now, spoken unto me would mean that he'd given him promises. He gave him these promises. He said, I'm going to live. I've got 14, 15 more years. I'll go to the temple in 3 days. He gave me a sign to show that it would happen. He's spoken unto me. And he himself had done it. He's actually done this. I am healed. I shall go softly all my years in the bitterness of my soul. Now, the bitterness of my soul here means the deep distress. And what Hezekiah is saying here is that in the deep distress that I had, this time in which I had my very insides wrung outward, so to speak, in this bitterness of my soul, as a result of this, I shall go softly all my years. And as we look upon the experiences of life, we see how many, many times that an experience like this causes a person to have a complete change, maybe in personality. They do go softly the rest of their life. They take things differently than they had before. They maybe do not react quite so fast. They realize that this is also temporary. And so it had a mellowing effect on Hezekiah. He said, I'll go softly all my years. Hezekiah probably now was much more reluctant to lose his temper, to become angry with someone, to do anything that might jeopardize his status with God. I'll go more softly the rest of my years. And the reason was because of this bitterness of my soul. The Lord had made a terrific change in Hezekiah by allowing him to live. And sometimes, you know, the Lord will, as a result of our stubbornness, and as a result of our hard-heartedness and refusal to obey Him, the Lord may take us to the very brink of disaster sometimes to bring about a change in our lives, to cause us, to force us to change ourselves. So in verse 16 he says, O Lord, by these things men live, and in all these things is the life of my spirit. And what things is he talking about here? This blessing you've given me, this extension of my life, this hearing my prayer, this heeding my request. These are the things by which men live, Lord. Men really do not live by bread and the material things of this life. They really live by the blessings of God. The things that God gives them as a blessing to them. That's what allows men to live. And Hezekiah is expressing this truth here. By these things men live, and in all these things is the life of my spirit. So wilt thou recover me and make me to live. Through the blessings of God are we really allowed to live. These are the things that allow us to live. Behold, for peace I had great bitterness, but thou hast in love to my soul delivered it from the pit of corruption, for thou hast cast all my sins behind my back. The peace that Hezekiah should have had, the peace that he would have had had he done exactly what God wanted, he had in place of that peace bitterness. He said, instead of peace, I had bitterness. I had distress instead of peace. Didn't have the peace that he should have had. I had that instead of peace. But yet, in spite of that, he says, thou hast in love to my soul delivered it from the pit of corruption. Now, the pit of corruption here would have to be an allusion to the grave itself. That's the place where our bodies decay. That pit of corruption known as the grave. He said, you delivered me from it. For thou hast cast all my sins behind my back. Now there's good reason here to believe that the reason Hezekiah had this sickness brought upon him was because of his sin. Something he'd done. We don't know exactly what, and we may get to that a little later in the next chapter in a reference there. But something he'd done that was displeasing to God. And so Hezekiah looks upon these and names them here as his sins. And the way the Lord had delivered him, really, was by being able to cast all my sins behind my back. In other words, the Lord had actually given Hezekiah forgiveness of his sins, and then he was free to remove this chastisement, this great hanging threat of death from over Hezekiah. So he said, you delivered it, or you delivered me from the pit of corruption, from the grave. And then he explains what it would have meant if it had gone on to the grave. For the grave cannot praise thee. Death cannot celebrate thee. They that go down into the pit cannot hope for the truth. Now, there's some very deep teaching here in this verse, and I think, though, we can make a mistake by trying to get more